Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marches, they never change anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what happened is, When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cat. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week. 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out. He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
I want to tell you about the first time. I was 21 years old and I saw $6 million of cash right in front of me. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That's what $6 million looks like. Insane. How the hell can I get this kind of money one day? And the guy who had the $6 million was a Jewish businessman who owned dealerships in San Fernando Valley area. And he gave me an advice at 21 that completely changed the way I do business till today. By the way, if you get value from today's message, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. Here's what this Jewish businessman told me. I said, how is it possible you got this much money and you're in your mid-30s, $6 million cash? He says, Patrick, there's one thing you need to know about Jews. I said, what's that? When one makes money, five make money. I said, what? He says, when one of us makes money in a business, five other Jews make money because we like to make money in groups. I said, so what's the benefit of that? He said, everybody keeps doing business together. He says, too many people, ethnicities, nationalities, cultures, backgrounds, they just want to be the one making money. They don't want anybody else around them making money. And then eventually they wonder, how come nobody wants to go into business with me? Because when you make money, nobody else makes money. So ask yourself the question. Number one, the person you're working for, does he make money and do you make money? And number two, the people that work with you, who report to you, if they give their best, do they also make good money the way you're making money? If the answer is yes, you're in a great place. Go do your part, and eventually you'll make your money like that Jewish mentor shared with this 21-year-old 24 years ago, 23 years ago. If you got value from this video, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. And if you've never watched the video, 20 Rules of Money, How Actually Money Works, click here to watch the video, 20 Rules of Money. Take care, everybody.
Can you do it when you
keep trying to rip me off. How in the world can you call me brother when we can't even have a man?
And when I come out, yeah, I came all my pride is gone. I opened up the door, yeah, and there was my glove compartment all torn out on my dashboard. And here you come, here you come, here you come again and again, yeah. The power sign and talking about my man, solid on that, my brother. I said, I don't like it. How can you really, 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 really mean it? I know about you. I know what you're good for. I know what you're doing around here. I know all about you. I know all about, I know you're my father, my father, low down, deep, rotten, no good, no good, no good, son of a seeker, yeah, 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 I know you're dirty. Can't you
can't even trust you behind my back door.
I can't use it, that kind of can on, I don't buy.
Giving me the old bad handshake,
don't do it. I can't use it, no.
Selling me right on, right on, right on, right on.
Okay, today, sorry for that little delay, turning family wealth into paychecks, and this is a segment that we're holding every Friday, started last Friday. The idea came from, the intellectual property came from Delmar America, who will be on here in a few moments. Family capital turning family wealth into paychecks. Now, before we bring Delmar on, I'm gonna just throw out there some examples of family wealth that we have focused in on a few times here on this podcast. Number one would be, and this is on our program when I was on the Scrolling Marquee on Blog Talk Radio, you know, if you want to go there. All right, cupcake recipe. Mignon Francois, mother of seven, lights cut off, electricity cut off, lights and water cut off, and she got the opportunity to earn $60 if she would bake 60 cupcakes. She only had $5 in her pocket. So, since then, she went from $5 to $60, $60 to $600 a week to getting utilities cut back on and saving the house from foreclosure. How did she do it? Well, the family wealth that saved her was her grandmother's cupcake recipe. She took that cupcake recipe, which she got from her grandmother by phone, and she went, took her $5 to the dollar store, Dollar General, what have you, Family Dollar, bought the ingredients to make the cupcakes. Now, I don't know where she made those cupcakes. Could have been at a neighbor's house. But she received $60 that day. She took that $60 and turned it into, took that cupcake. See, that's family wealth. Because it was grandma's recipe. And then she had at least two of her children help her you know, making baked cupcakes. So the family, let's count the family wealth involved. Her grandmother's recipe, then her two daughters and herself, and those three people, that's human capital. Human capital, that is wealth. So they were able to get things delegated, do the work, and then sell the cupcakes. That's family wealth. Grandma's recipe and two of her daughters and herself, is as simple as it is, we always have something to work with. Okay, next example of family wealth, Children's Playhouse. I've played this audio on here before of Lauren Nelson out of Attica, New York. She wanted a dollhouse or a playhouse, and she found one, but it was a little like toy playhouse, but they wanted $600 for it. Her dad said, no, no, you can go ahead and get a real camp, a real playhouse for that. So what they did was she looked in the paper and she came on Craigslist, found a camper for sale. They were asking $500. She had $400 cash, and she bought the camper, and then her grandmother and her mother and dad and sisters and friends. And Lauren's only 12 years old right now. So, and she took that money and turned into camp, what she calls it, Camp Huguet. I played audio on here a few times. And look at the family wealth. The family wealth was, the dad said, gave us some intellectual property. You know, you can get something like this on your own. Number two, she had the money from her babysitting or whatever to buy the camper and fix it up. And she bought a regular RV camper, man. Look up Lauren Nelson, Tiny Houser, and you'll see the video on that. Then she had human capital from her parents, grandmother, and sister, and other girlfriends. Now, she can take that same formula and imagine if she turned it into business, restoring campers and selling them, you know, as an affordable, sustainable living. All right, that's a whole different podcast. Okay, now, Nine Friends, I played on here several times before with this guy. You know, he bought a house, but it was his nine friends in those pickup trucks, probably about a total of 18 of them, that supplied the labor, the human capital, to turn a rundown house into something that looks brand new. And family wealth. All right, solar cabin, which I've played on here several times. Lamar Alexander, built the cabin for $2,000. Now, himself building it, because he built it by himself, that's human capital. That is your body. You as an individual counts as wealth. Within the context of family, is part of the family wealth. He built it for $2,000, but now he added on solar, so he built the whole house with the electrical system, with solar electrical system, for $5,000. He can turn that into, imagine if he got some help. You know, imagine if he got his nine friends together and they built four or five of those a month and sold. Once again, family wealth. All right, Chinese carryout menu. Look at a Chinese carryout menu and count the number of paychecks on there. Now, the family wealth could be, because here's what they're doing with the Chinese family menu, is number one, you know, all those dishes are made from pork, beef, chicken, and fish. All right, seafood, you know, seafood. So with the talent of cooking within the family, All right. Because they've got over 200 to 300 recipes on there, 200 to 300 dishes, shrimp fried rice, you know, chicken fried rice, egg foo young, shrimp egg foo young, vegetable egg foo young, sweet and sour chicken, spring roll, egg roll, you know, shredded beef, ribs, lunch specials, can of soda, poo-poo platters, all right? Each and every one of those dishes counts as a paycheck. If you order, let's say, a lunch special, that's $6.50 or something like that. That's a $6.50. Well, imagine if they got 100 orders for lunch. All right. Second Kings 4:1-7. I got to correct this on there. I forgot to add the 4. The widow, bill collectors came by and said, look, your husband left behind a debt. If we can't collect on that debt, then we're going to take your two sons as slaves to work off the debt. So they gave us some time. So the widow, she went to a lodge of the property, and he told her, okay, and I'm giving my version of it, is, okay, what kind of family wealth do you have? They don't put it in the words, the terms that I just said, but she went back home and looked at, she took an assessment, an inventory of her family wealth. What she had was, she had herself, she had two sons, so she had three people as human capital, people that can do the work. Then she had a little pot of oil. That's also the family wealth. It just wasn't the oil, but the oil along with the family wealth. The next thing is they had, because they're taking inventory of the family wealth. The family wealth within the family home, okay, we're up to what, 1, 2, 3 people, the family home, and the pot of oil, that's 5 resources within the family wealth definition. And then the family home was in a community. They had neighbors. And the sons went out into the community, in their neighborhood, and borrowed other vessels. They brought them back home to the family, because now it's a family business. And she poured that oil, because the oil just wasn't the oil. But you had to recognize the state, she took inventory of what type of family wealth they already had. Long story short, they filled up all those oil containers, and then they went out and sold it, and they were able to pay off the debt and live off the rest. All that came from family wealth. Family capital. Let's see. Yoder, Kansas. Look it up. Yoder, Kansas is an Amish and Mennonite community. And all, they have businesses on there, and those are family-based businesses. And if you take a look at their paychecks. Now, their paycheck, like, let's take a woodworker. A woodworker might have a series of paychecks based on furniture, based on, they might build garages, they might build barns, they might build cabins. That's, you know, that's 4 general paychecks. The wife or daughter or both they could have a bakery. So if they sold shoe fire pies, cupcakes, rolls, loaves of bread, different types of pastry, that's at least five basic paychecks right there. Let's say they sold dinners. So they sold chicken dinners, meatloaf dinners, seafood dinners. They sold breakfast, lunch. That's at least 10 paychecks coming from the meatloaf dinner is a form of family wealth. The carport that can be built by somebody within your family and turned into a paycheck. That's all family wealth. So we all have it. We all have it. And then you need to, you know, some of you, look at the tools of production. Those are forms of wealth too. I'm looking at three. My mother passed away about going on 4 years ago in April. I'm looking at three sewing machines she left behind. I need to learn how to sew because those are tools of production. Those are wealth machines. Those are money machines. I need to learn how to use. So we're all surrounded by it. A lot of us might be in families that we might not recognize it, but we're surrounded by it. So, that's it on that. All right, now, we have Delmar America. We're going to bring him on here right after this quick interlude.
I make my living off the evening news.
Okay, Delmar, are you available? Okay, wait a minute. Let me see.
Hello, can you hear me now? Hello, can you hear me now?
Okay,
good.
I can hear you clear. You got the mic.
Okay. Yeah, I want to first of all thank LA for this opportunity, for giving me this chance to share something here. But I want to, due to technical difficulties, which we've been on, you know, we had that already. And now we had the added element like the quarterback and the wide receiver. We may have got our signals where the receiver went right and the quarterback threw left. But anyway, due to a schedule already in place and I have to respond to it, I'm going to have to brief what I'm planning to say. And my availability is also going to be shortened. But there is information available for you to follow up on if you'd like. You can go to my site. It's entitled DelmarAmerica.us. And that's America spelled with two A's. That's AAMERICA.us. And about the third on-demand podcast deals with family capital. So we'll probably be sharing that later on in part. So what I want to do briefly here this morning is a brief introduction overview of what we are about as far as the concept of family capital. And okay. I like what LA has shared, and I don't have anything contrary to it, but I'm taking a little different approach than the way he's looking at it. And that's great because we have options here, not just the way I'm looking at this. Now, it may help to understand that mine is a part of a ministry /business or business /ministry, because we are about making money. And so our term for family capital is more directed toward actual cash money that is spent. And we talk about how to take some of that spent money and convert it over to soul money and therefore create this paycheck. So as you listen to the broadcast, you go to the podcast, and as I'm going to introduce here, it's a little different, but again, it's great because there are many, many options that's available for us as far as this concept of family. And the first thing I heard that made that pop in my mind is when LA talked about social capital. That's the term I heard him talk about, social capital. Then I thought, family capital. And it's not a new concept, maybe a new expression, but it's old as man. So the overview, first of all, what do I mean by family capital? And I'm speaking of the money that comes into any household, whether it be welfare, retirement, social, any of them have to come to household, that's family wealth, particularly that can be converted in what I'm teaching to example. I'm going to use round numbers to keep it simple. If the household requires $1,000 to operate, that's to pay the light, gas, water, food, everything it takes to keep that household going, whatever number in there, that money coming in each month, however way, is family capital. And let's imagine, as it is so often today, the family doesn't spend only the $1,000, but they spend $1,200, which is about $200 more than what comes in. And this creates what you often hear as a living from paycheck to paycheck. And you probably heard a case of where if the money comes in on the first or around the first, 27th of the month, the money is spent and there's a month left. And you heard about this statement, too much month left at the end of the money. The money's in it, and it's a month left. Then when we talk about how to take that $1,000 that's being spent for various needs, and instead of just spending that money, we show how to take some of those same dollars and sow some of them. Now, yes, there's some discretionary spending in there, and we help the person identify that. But we talk about taking some of the spending money and sow it. And you know, we talk about sowing, some we talk about seed, and you put it in the ground or well proper place, and it reproduces a fruit. It generates something that's worth more. Even in the case of L.A. with the lady with the cupcakes, whatever. The value changed after she took the ingredients and converted them to the product and then marked the product. So here again, we're talking about something similar to that, except in my example, where we take our ministry is not where you actually make something. We're actually talking about getting to the distribution of products that every household, every family already is using, and by design create a monthly family paycheck. In fact, you find on the website Passion Paycheck. We're talking more about that. So this comes from a biblical Judeo-Christian value process that I've been involved in for 50-some years of ministry, and now see that the old model dealing with money in the community that we see today is pretty much a poverty-based doctrine, as far as I'm concerned, because when you don't teach people one thing, you by default teach the other. So most Christian-based churches actually teach their people how to be broke, to be in debt. And, of course, folks at the top got the money. But, again, we show that let's take some of that money that you're already spending coming every month, family capital, and we're strictly talking about money. And, again, this does not exclude the things that L.A. mentioned in his example. But we take some of that money, and by putting to a particular specialized program, you create family wealth. You create a family paycheck. Now let me kind of move to a deeper concept that goes behind this or the foundation of what we mean here. We believe that there are, in our program, we have 5 to 7 main points or pearls that we believe that traditional religious models have missed. And the first one is build, number two, grow, number three, multiply, number four, fortify, and number five is prayer. And let's go start with the fifth one. And we believe that there's ample evidence, first in God's word and then in all of example in creation, that man by nature is the builder. And the example there, we go to that, we'll have time this morning. Man also is a grower. Man has learned how to grow whatever he wants to grow anywhere on the planet and soon to be growing on the moon. But man's also a multiplier. In other words, the race has been multiplying ever since, and that's the law, multiply. But whatever we build, grow, and multiply, you have to fortify it. And I know I got support from Chris as a builder. You know that no matter what kind of structure you put up, how good it looks, you have to fortify that structure a certain way against all the things that will come up against it. So fortify. And then, of course, the prayer part comes in. Again, the introduction here then to this concept of family wealth is we're talking about the same money that every household has coming in, regardless of what the source is. And taking some of that probably discretionary money that's probably being spent in ways that is not as productive as it should be, and sowing it in a certain way that it creates a paycheck every month. And we believe that every family household has the raw material or the items for this to work. But again, the principles behind it is that instead of the community spending all their money in the economic system we have today, we believe that people who follow God's order are told to build their own houses, grow their own food, and of course the multiplying the family is going to come with that, But fortify all of that by the decision that we make by how we use this family capital. And the prayer, of course, that goes with that is such that that is a better option than what we see practiced today. Not going to spend any time criticizing that, but again, the simplicity of building, growing, multiplying, fortifying, all is so simple now. But again, it's not a part of the old model. The old model pretty much says it's all about the hereafter. And we believe that the model that we're teaching from says first comes the natural, first comes the money, first comes the economics. Build that foundation first, and then everything else will fall in place, and therefore the funding and the housing, everything you need will follow that. But it's by design. It's by law. It's not a chance thing. It doesn't just happen by luck. So, again, given the change in schedule this morning and the commitment all in place, that's a brief overview of the concept of family capital as we are so introducing. And again, if you go to DelmarAmerica.us, I think about the third podcast there, you'll find one entitled Family Capital, #1. And that'll give you a little bit more information about what I just said here. And again, I apologize for the change. Again, the technical problem is not something we do anything about, but I have a schedule I have to go meet to get glad to be next. And I will hopefully get the opportunity to come back on next Friday. And LA and I will talk to
every
you.
Friday. Delma, what I'll do next Friday is that I'll bring you on at 10:35 or 10:45. That way, you have a lot more time.
Yeah, and again, hopefully I won't have this conflict in schedule. It's a medical matter. I have to respond to it. I have a need for it. You know about that. So I've got to go talk to my doctor here to keep me coming back from my repair work. So, again, apologize, but I will be back in touch with you as soon as I can.
Okay. All right, then. Thanks a lot, Delma. We're going to wrap it up for today. Everyone have a good, safe rest of the day and good holiday and a good weekend, safe holiday.